He has not very much spiritual development and the conditions that surround him are not such as would be in accord with our conditions, and hence we will have to refuse to let 88, the Paget messages 1915, him write very often, but he can communicate through some of us. Well, he is dark in appearance as he necessarily must be until he gets more enlightenment of soul. He will undoubtedly suffer because of the sins he committed when on earth, and will pay the penalty until he finds the true way to God's love and forgiveness. Of course, he has one advantage over many spirits who come over bringing the results of their life on earth, and that is that he has some idea as to the way to salvation. You and Dr. Stone told him when on earth that he must turn his thoughts to spiritual things, and while he did not understand just what you meant, yet, such advice had some influence on him and will cause him to try to learn what was meant, and having Rose and the rest of us to enlighten him, he will progress more rapidly to these higher things, and the more rapid his progress the sooner his suffering will leave him. He is now commencing to realize that as he sowed so must he reap. While Rose is with him a great deal and loves him and tries to help him, yet all that isn't sufficient to prevent his memory from scourging him because of the life he led on earth. But we all pray for him and try to show him the way, and he is ready to believe and is commencing already to pray to the Father. So you see, you must all sooner or later face this great crisis, and the better prepared you are to meet it, the less will be your sufferings and the more happiness you will experience. Yes, it was Laura, she is very unhappy. I had never met her before and your mother said that she had not either. You see, in this world family ties do not always bring spirits together. When the relationship is distant the spirits lose interest in relations merely because they are relations, and find themselves attracted to spirits who have like qualities and relations. This relationship counts for very little in the spirit world of itself, and when we meet our loved ones of earth, before they come over we stay with them for a while, and then if there are no other attractions than mere relationship, we gradually separate. This is the law of attraction, and we are compelled to obey it. So that when on earth mortals sing of meeting again on the other shore to part no more, they will find that they are mistaken. They will meet, but unless conditions compel it, they will part again and may never meet ever in the spirit world. Love is the thing which determines the relationship and place of living in this world, I mean similar loves existing between spirits. No. 89. Spirit loves another after a little while merely because that other is a mother or father or wife or brother, but loves it because that spirit has a similar love of the beautiful and true that it has. So you see, relationship after the first meeting and living together a little while determines nothing. Of course, while the child or father of mother or sister or brother remains in the earth life, the spirit relative will love them and watch over them and try to help them in every way. Especially will the mother for ties among son or daughter, and this is in accordance with the maternal law of love. But when that father or son too becomes a spirit, then the law of love as it were changes, and like loves like, be there a natural relationship or not. This, I know, seems contrary to what mortals usually believe and accept as a fact, but it is true. When my children come over, my love for them will not be the same as it is now. Then they will find that their love will probably, after a time, turn elsewhere, and it will be only another in memory, for our loves may take entirely different directions. And this love, while for the moment may seem unnatural in its workings, yet it is not, for happiness comes with love reciprocated, and love comes only in reciprocation of its own kind. We do not think that you will be forever with your children or parents or any other relative forever, for that may not be so. If that relative has like attractions that you have, then you may be together as long as that attraction lasts. Suppose that you make greater progress in your spiritual or even in your natural development than the other spirit, it cannot be supposed for a moment that you will determine the results of your development in order to stay with that other spirit. No, that would be a violation of the law of progress, and you could not and would not want to delay your upward movement. So the idea that when we meet in the spirit world we meet to part no more is not correct, and is contrary to the laws that determine the condition and place of habitation of spirits. I know this of my own experience. My parents are in a lower sphere than I am and have much less spiritual development, and while I visit them sometimes, yet they have not the attraction for me that other spirits to whom I have no relationship. And why is this? not because I do not care for my parents as such, but because the objects and extent of their loves are different from mine. The main fact that they are my parents does not cause me to want to be with them all the time. I could not so desire if, as you might say, I wanted. The Paget Messages 1915, 2. Love is the attraction, and love must demand a likeness in a spiritual sense of the objects of its love. The time may come when I will never again see my parents and may forget that they ever had an existence. I say may, but I hope not, for I desire that sometime they will progress so that they may be a similar condition to my own in spiritual development, and then, of course, we will live in the same peace and necessity will meet and enjoy one another's company. But not because we are parents and daughter, but because our loves are similar and our attractions alike. This is a matter that few mortals understand, and it may well be that they do not, because the love existing between many a relative is a beautiful thing and one that causes much happiness and self-preservation. There is nothing on earth like the mother's love, and no provision of God's blessings for mortals equals this great gift of a mother's love, and so with the other natural loves to a lesser degree. But as Jesus said, "He that doeth the will of my Father is my mother and brother and sister." So you must realize that what you and the natural love of relations is only for the earth life and a short time afterwards. Each individual is in and of himself a complete unit, depending not on relationship to others, and as such must find his place in the great eternity, which must be determined by the development and progress of his own soul in expectation of what may become of the souls of his earth relations. He is attracted only by souls of similar development and will find his home in the company of such souls irrespective of the question of natural relationship. I have written enough for tonight and must stop. So with all my love, I am your own true and loving, Helen. March 30, 1915. I am here, your old partner. I am very happy and have progressed very much since I last wrote you, and have increased in my faith and knowledge of God and His love. I am very near the fifth sphere, and I hope to soon go there and be with your father and Professor Salyards, who have been there for quite a while, and who are so very happy and filled with the Father's love. Well, I received the female spirit that you sent me last night, and I tried very hard to show her the way to redemption and freedom from her sufferings. She has such little soul development 90, that it was a difficult undertaking to reach what little soul she has. But I struggled with her with all my powers of arguments, and also with all the influences of my love which I now possess, and at last she commenced to see the light, and promised me to pray to the Father, and try to believe in His divine love as standing ready to be bestowed on her and save her from her most unhappy condition. She was one of the most unloving and the most unlovable spirits that I have ever met, and was literally starved in her soul. No love for anyone, not even for herself, and in her strict ideas of what was right and wrong, she had sacrificed every sympathy and feeling of love to the building up of the intellect. So I had an uphill task from the beginning. She said that you told her that she must come to me with an open mind and a will free from all prejudice, and then I could help her. Well, she tried to assume that position, but it was difficult for her to do so. She is a very strong-minded woman, and, consequently, she was not easily convinced of those things which did not appeal to her mind. She thought that the mind is the whole of spirit, as some earth people teach, but when I told her that spirit and mind are both only a part of the soul, and the mind the lesser part, she seemed astonished and couldn't accept the assertion as true. She has no soul, that is, it is all dried up and dead for want of exercise. She has now some little awakening, and if she persists in prayer and faith, she will finally become convinced that soul is what brings happiness and joy, and saves her from her torment. So I will continue to help her if she will permit me to, and she now seems disposed to do so. Well, you have had a great many communications since last I wrote you, and some of them were very wonderful in the information they conveyed. The Master is so much interested in your welfare that he visits you very often, and you must not let your heart doubt that he comes to you, because he seems so brotherly and familiar. It is he, and his love for you is very great. I know this, for he sometimes tells me of his great love and interest in you. He has told you of certain things that will come to you in the future, and I say to you, that you must believe him, for they will come true. He knows better than anyone what the future will bring. Even though he may decline to acknowledge this great power, only trust him and you will not be disappointed. The Paget Messages 1915. I am now preparing a discourse on a subject that I desire to write you in a little while for your consideration, and I hope information. I will let you know beforehand so that you may prepare yourself to receive it. Well, I will not write more tonight. Well, I think that Garfield is too much given to the things purely intellectual to accept our teachings of the new birth, but I think that sooner or later he will think of it, and when he does he will not rest until he has found the truth of the matter. Yes, he told me of his interview with your grandmother, and said that she had put to him some wonderful propositions which he could not exactly understand, but which he has been considering very earnestly. He thinks that your grandmother is a very superior spirit in her knowledge of spiritual things, and in her beauty and goodness, and he said there must be something in what she told him to account for her great beauty and power. She showed him such powers of soul and mind that he was astonished and could only keep silent while she talked, and listened to what she said. He was impressed by her and I think, after a little while, he will visit her again and seek for further information. I want to say that she is a wonderful spirit in all things that pertain to the bigger things of spirit life. Yes, I saw him, Sirik, and said a few words to him in the way of encouragement, but he is not in a very good spiritual condition, but he has the advantage of having had his eyes open to the fact that there is such a thing as spiritual development while on earth. He is only fairly happy, and as the new sensation of a new life wears off, I think he will commence to suffer because of the errors of his earth life. His soulmate is with him a great deal and is helping him, and so is your wife. She is a wonderful spirit and seems so full of a divine love and goodness that her influence among spirits is marvelous. I tell you, Paget, that you are a fortunate man in having such a soulmate. Well, I must stop, so good night. Your old partner and brother, Albert G. Riddle. I am here, Helen. I will not write much tonight as you are tired. So let me tell you of a little incident that happened only yesterday. The spirits that you sent to me came, and I had quite a long talk with them, and told them the way to light and happiness, and tried to impress upon them the necessity of faith and prayer. One said that he did not believe in prayer and if that was the way out of 91, his torments he did not see much hope for him. The other said that he when a child used to pray, but that was so long ago that he had forgotten how, and that he thought it useless to try again. Well, I talked to them a while longer, and there came to us a spirit that you had helped some months ago, and who had learned the way and was enjoying comparative happiness because he had followed your advice. He heard what these two spirits said, and at once told them, that a short time ago his condition was worse than theirs and that he had sought your help, and you told him of this wonderful love of the Father, and of prayer and faith, and that he had told you that he did not believe in either God or prayer, but that you became so insistent that you would not let him go until he promised to pray and try to believe. That you literally tortured him in telling him of this wonderful love and the only way to it. That he made the promise in order to get away from you, not intending to keep it, but that before you let him go, you told him how much you were interested in him and how much you loved him, but his heart melted, and when he left you he determined to keep his promise, and after that, he commenced to pray as you had told him, and that at night you prayed for him, and called him to pray with you, and that as he prayed the light commenced to come to him, and at last some of the wonderful love that you had told him about, came to him, and he found that as this love came into his soul, his sufferings and torture left him, so that now he was a very happy spirit, but still a praying one and a believing one. When he had finished telling the two spirits of his experience, they commenced to ask him questions, and to think that there might be something or some way to relief, and after a little time commenced to pray, and the spirit who had told them his experience prayed with them, and as they prayed they commenced to feel strange sensations as they said, and after a little while they said they felt better, and believed that there might be something in prayer and faith. They very soon thereafter left me, but said that they would continue to pray, and asked if I thought that you would pray for them as you did for the other spirit. I told them that you had already prayed for them, and would do so at night before you retired, and they said that they would be with you, And last night as you prayed for them, they were there and joined in your prayers. They are now praying continually, and I know that soon they, the Paget Messages 1915, will see the light, and commence to feel their sufferings and torments leaving them. Oh, my dear, what a blessing it is to help the unfortunate and despondent souls. How you should thank God that He has given you the means to reach the hearts of these unfortunates, and the power to help them. They will always remember you with love and thanks, and you will feel the influence of your kind actions. I must stop, so good night, my own dear and loving Ned. Your own true and loving, Helen. March 31, 1915. I am here, your grandmother. I came to write you about the forgiveness and pardon of the Father, and to enlighten you upon this subject which is so little understood, since men first commenced to distort the teachings of the Master. Forgiveness is that operation of the divine mind which relieves man of the penalties of his sins that he has committed, and permits him to turn from his evil thoughts and deeds, and seek the love of the Father, and if he earnestly seeks, find the happiness which is waiting for him to obtain. It does not violate any law that God has established to prevent man from avoiding the penalties of his violations of the law of God controlling his conduct. The law of compensation, that what a man sows that shall he reap, is not set aside, but in the particular case where a man becomes penitent and in all earnestness prays the Father to forgive him of his sins and make a new man of him, the operation of another and greater law is called into activity, and the old law of compensation is nullified, and, as it were, swallowed up in the power of this law of forgiveness and love. So you see there is no setting aside of any of God's laws. As in the physical world certain lesser laws are overcome by greater laws, so in the spirit world or in the operation of spiritual things, the greater laws must prevail over the lesser. God's laws never change, but the application of these laws to particular facts and conditions do seem to change, when two laws come into apparent conflict, and the lesser must give way to the greater. The spiritual laws are just as fixed as are the physical laws that control the material universe, and no law having application to the same condition of facts, ever is different in its operation or in its effects. The sun and planets in their movements are governed by fixed laws, and they operate with such exactness that men who make a study of these laws and comprehend them can, with almost mathematical precision, foretell the movements of these heavenly bodies. This only means that as long as the sun and the planets remain as they are, and surrounded by the same influences, and meet no law operating in a manner contrary to the laws which usually control them, these planets and sun will repeat their movements year after year in the same way and with like precision. But suppose that a more powerful and contrary law should come into operation, and influence the movements of these bodies, do you suppose for a moment that they would pursue the same course as if such greater law had not intruded itself? The effect of this is not to set aside the lesser law, or even to change it, but to subordinate it to the operations of the greater law, and if these operations were removed or ceased to act, the lesser law would resume its operations on these planets again, and they would move in accordance therewith, just as if its power had never been affected by the greater law. So, in the spirit world, when a man has committed sins on earth, the law of compensation demands that he must pay the penalty of these sins until there has been a full expiation, or until the law is satisfied. And this law does not change in its operations, and no man can avoid or run away from the inexorable demands of the law. He cannot of himself abate one jot or tittle, scarcely detectable amount, of the penalties, but must pay to the last farthing as the Master said, and hence, he cannot, of himself hope to change the operations of this law. But, as the Creator of all law has provided another and higher law, which, under certain conditions may be brought into operation and causes the former law to cease to operate, and man may experience the benefit of the workings of this higher law. So when God forgives a man of his sins, and makes him a new creature in his nature and love, he does not, for the particular case, annihilate the law of compensation, but removes that upon which this law may operate. Sin is violation of God's law, and the effect of sin is the penalty which such violation imposes. A man's suffering for sins committed are not the results of God's special condemnation in each particular case, but are the results of the workings and scourging of his conscience and recollections, and as long as conscience works he will suffer. And 92, the Paget Messages 1915, the greater the sins committed, the greater will be the suffering. Now all this implies that a man's soul is filled to a greater or lesser extent with these memories, which for the time constitute his very existence. He lives with these memories, and the suffering and torment, which result from them can never leave him until the memories of these sins, or the result of them, cease to be a part of himself and his constant companions. This is the inexorable law of compensation, and man of himself has no way of escaping this law except by his long expiation, which removes these memories and satisfies the law. Man cannot change this law, and God will not. So, as I say, the law never changes. But remember this fact, that in order for the law to operate, a man must have these memories, and they must be a part of his very existence. Now, suppose that the creator of this law has created another law, but which under certain conditions, and upon a man doing certain things, these memories are taken from him, and no longer constitute a part or portion of his existence. Then, I ask, what is there in awe of that man upon this law of compensation that can act or operate? The law is not changed, it is not even set aside, but upon which it can operate no longer exists, and consequently there is no reason or existence of facts which call for its operation. So, I say, as to your scientists and philosophers, that God's laws are fixed and never change, but I further say, which they fail to perceive, that certain conditions which may and do call for the operations of these laws today, tomorrow change or cease to exist, so that the laws are no longer effective. And so when the truth of God's forgiveness of sin is declared, many wise men hold up their hands and shout, God's laws do not change, and even God himself cannot change them. And to effect a forgiveness of sins, the great law of compensation must be violated. God works no such miracle, or gives special dispensation. No, man must pay the penalty of his evil deeds until the law is fulfilled. How limited is the knowledge of mortals, and of spirits as well, of the power and wisdom and love of the Father. His love is the greatest thing in the entire universe, and the law of love is the greatest law. Every other law is subordinate to it, and must work in unison with it, and love, divine love of the Father, when given to man and he possesses it, is the fulfilling of all law. This love frees man from all law except the law of its own 93, self, and when man possesses this love he is slave to no law and is free indeed. The law of compensation and all laws not in harmony with the law of love, have nothing upon which to operate in that man's case, and God's laws are not changed but merely, as to this man, have no existence. Now, let all men, wise and unwise, know that God in his love and wisdom, has provided a means by which, man, if he so will, may escape the unchanging law of compensation, and become no longer subject to its demands and penalties. And these means are simple and easy, and within the comprehension and grasp of every living soul, be he saint or sinner, a wise man or an ignorant one. Intellect in the sense of being learned is not involved, but the man who knows that God exists and provides him with food and raiment as the result of his daily toil, as well as the great intellectual scientist or philosopher, may learn the way to these redeeming truths. I do not mean that a man by mere exercise of mental powers may receive the benefit of this great provision for his redemption. The soul must seek and it will find, and the soul of the wise may not be as capable of receiving as the soul of the ignorant. God is love. Man has a natural love, but this natural love is not sufficient to enable him to find these great means that I speak of. Only the divine love of the Father, and he is willing that all men should have this love. It is free and waiting to be bestowed upon all men. But strange as it may seem, God will not, and I might say, cannot, bestow this love unless man seeks for it, and asks for it in earnestness and faith. The will of man is a wonderful thing, and stands between him and this love, if he fails to exercise this will in seeking for it. No man can secure it against his will. What a wonderful thing is man's will, and how he should study and learn what a great part of his being it is. The love of the Father comes only into a man's soul when he seeks it in prayer and faith, and of course this implies that he wills it to come to him. No man is ever refused this love when he properly asks for it. Now this love is a part of the divine essence, and when a man possesses it in sufficient abundance he becomes a part of divinity itself, and in the divine there is no sin or error, and, consequently, when he becomes a part of this divinity no sin or error can form a part of his being. The Paget Messages 1915. Now, as I have said, man who is without this love has his memories of sin and evil deeds, and, under the law of compensation, must pay the penalties. Yet when this divine love comes into his soul, it leaves no room for these memories, and as he becomes more and more filled with this love, these memories disappear and only the love inhabits his soul, as it were. Hence, there remains nothing in him upon which this law can operate, and the man is no longer its slave or subject. This love is sufficient of itself to cleanse the soul from all sin and error, and make man one with the Father. This is forgiveness of sin, or rather the result of forgiveness. When a man prays to the Father for this forgiveness, he never turns a deaf ear, but says, in effect, I will remove your sins and give you my love, I will not set aside or change my laws of compensation, but I will remove from your soul everything upon which this law can operate, and as to you it becomes as if it had no existence. I know by your personal experience that this forgiveness is a real, actual, existing thing, and when the Father forgives, sin disappears, and love only exists, and that love and its fullness is the fulfilling of the law. So let men know that God does forgive sin, and when he forgives the penalty disappears, and when they disappear as the result of such forgiveness, no law of God is changed or violated. This was the great mission of Jesus when he came to earth. Before he came and taught this great truth, the forgiveness of sin was not understood, even by the Hebrew teachers, but their doctrine was an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. The divine love, as I have feebly described, was not known or sought for, only the care and protection and material benefits that God might give to the Hebrews. The divine love entering into and taking possession of the souls of men constitute the new birth, and without this no man can see the kingdom of God. My dear son, I have written you a long but imperfect communication, but there is sufficient in it for men to think of and to meditate upon, and if they do so and open their souls to the divine influence, they will know God can forgive sin, and save men from its penalties, so that they will not have to undergo the long period of expiation, which in their natural state the law of compensation ever demands. So without writing further, I will say that I love you with all my heart, and soul, and pray the Father to give you this great love in all its abundance. Your loving grandmother, Anne Rollins. April 1, 1915. I am here, Jesus. I have been with you very much today, trying to cheer you with my love and influence. You are much better than you were yesterday or a few days past, and your soul is in a condition of development and love that it has not been in for a long time. The love of the Father is with you and filling your soul to an extent that you can hardly realize, for it is a love that knows no limitation and is without bound or cessation. I am glad that you are experiencing this great inflowing of this love of the Father, and with it will come a faith that will make the Father seem very near to you. Try to realize the presence of this great love more and more, and you will find a happiness that you have never before felt, and a great peace will come to you that will make your worries disappear and leave you a free man. So my dear brother, let this confidence in the Father take possession of you, and believe that there is nothing that can separate you from this great love and happiness. I wanted to write this to you so that you may know that the feelings and thoughts which you have are not the mere imaginings of your own mind, but the real, true and substantial things that I tell you of. Keep praying to the Father, and his love will come to you in increasing abundance, and with this love will come a wonderful faith that will make real all the longings and aspirations of your soul, so that you will know that the Father has the personality that I wrote you of a few nights ago. I am pleased with you and with your efforts to become a true child of the Father and in unison with him, and a recipient of his favor and mercy. Go not in the way of the wicked, nor associate with those whose thoughts are given to the evils of the material life, or to those things which are not approved of by the Father, or by his higher spirits who so often now come to you. I am with you and you have all my love and help to enable you to become pure in heart, as you so often now pray you may become. Keep praying and you will find that this condition of soul will be yours, and with it will come a realization that you have been regenerated, and are at one with the Father and His love. Your blessings will be great and the 94, the Paget Messages 1915, happiness that will come to you will be beyond all conception that you may now have of what happiness may be.